Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
This is Puelo Deer from Montreal. And you're listening to David, Catherine, and Matt on the Tennis Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Puelo, in Montreal, which is something I never thought I'd say in my life. But that is Montreal in a better accent than I can say it in. And we are not in Montreal, but we are in three very different locations at the moment. I'm in Solihull. Matt is in Glasgow, as he has been all week. And Catherine is in... Where are you, Catherine?
Torino, Turin.
Hey, fantastic. How's it
and,
been?
And what could be more Italian than being in a hotel that is situated inside what used to be the Fiat factory?
That is very
or
good.
A Fiat factory. I don't know whether a country has more than one Fiat factory, but yes, that's where I am. And in fact, on the top of the building I'm in is where the famous car park scene in The Italian Job was filmed. So I really am having a quintessentially Italian experience.
Oh, well, that's marvellous. You've done your research as well on your locale, which I like.
I mean, they mention it to you when you're checking in at the hotel.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Puelo, for introducing this edition of the Tennis Podcast. Puelo is one of our friends of the show. If you'd like to introduce a show, you can do so by becoming a friend at the intro level. And we've got loads and loads to talk about today because the semifinals have been set up once and for all in Glasgow. I would say a little bit surprisingly in terms of what's ended up happening. Catherine's been at Media Day in Turin. So, yeah, we've got plenty to get our teeth into. Matt, we were drunk on Billie Jean King Cup this time last night. I feel a little less tipsy tonight, to be honest, because the matches didn't really do what I thought they'd do. That what we've had in terms of results is Switzerland winning against Canada. We've had Czech Republic winning against the United States. I think on their own, those are not two massive shocks, even though their opponents are very strong on paper. I just thought that they would be classic ties, and they weren't.
I agree with you, David. I feel a little bit shortchanged from today. I thought we would get at least one deciding doubles rubber, maybe even two, because as you said, they're quite even teams. I don't think any result would have been all that shocking. But actually, perhaps the most shocking thing was the fact that one or two of the matches were much more one-sided than I expected. And I think the most interesting part of the day was probably that we had some really big calls from the captains, which ended up coming off. You know, I saw some of the teams named on paper and thought, oh, okay, that's an interesting decision from the captain. Not sure I would have done that. And it absolutely worked out for both Heinz Günthert, the Swiss captain, and Peter Paller, the Czech captain.
Yeah, well, let's start in turn, shall we? Take the Switzerland against Canada tie first. And that selection you're referring to is Victoria Golubic, isn't it? Who's played against Bianca Andreescu. And the reason that's notable, I assume, is because she's replaced Jill Teichmann, who we know has thrived in this competition last year.
That's right. And played and won two matches just a couple of days ago for Switzerland. And I was expecting Heinz Günthardt to be a little bit smug and very pleased with himself for getting that one right when I asked him in the press conference at the end of the day. And he was a little bit. He said in the French portion of the press conference that he had made that decision on Monday, that it was his plan all along that he would split Jill Teichmann and Victoria Golubic in the singles in the groups because he wanted both of them playing. He trusts them both. And he thought Jill Teichmann would match up better with Italy and Victoria Golubic would match up better against Bianca Andreescu and Canada. And I have to say that absolutely was the case because Golubic didn't start very well against Andreescu. She was really struggling on serve and Andreescu was teeing off, being really powerful behind that serve, hitting a lot of good returns and kind of overwhelming Golubic. And therefore, for the first half an hour or so, I thought, oh, Heinz Günthardt has got this wrong. This is not working. But I have to say, in the second and third sets, you saw why he picked Golubic, because she was able to disrupt Andreescu with her variety. And she played absolutely brilliant tennis in the second and third sets, Golubic. And Andreescu became a little bit of an error machine. And I think a lot of that was because of how well Golubic was playing. And also, she just brought a lot more energy in those second and third sets. I spoke to her afterwards and she was really flat at the start of the match. And she said, yeah, that's a problem I have, that I get in my own head and then I just become really passive, really nervous. And actually, that's why I like this competition, having a coach on the sidelines who I can talk to, teammates. It's much better to talk through my problems and what I'm experiencing and let it out. And I can become quite energetic and aggressive. And that's what we saw. And that's more what I expected from Andreescu. I felt like she would be the one bringing the energy and the vibes to the match. But actually, it was Golubic. And for the majority of that match, the second and third sets, she was the better player. That was a surprise to me. But it was also a clash. Now that we have Catherine on the pod, I can say this. I don't know whether we've brought this up yet, but it was a clash between the backhand list and the intensity list. Because Catherine's working on one, an intensity list, which I'm sure she can describe in much better detail than I can. But I'm pretty sure Bianca Andreescu is top of it.
Yes, I've been wondering lately whether intensity is the right word because there's more to it than just intensity. I think there's a bit of sass involved as well. I'm not. It's quite possible that a word doesn't exist in the English language to correctly. Yeah, that's a factor. But it's possible that. Look, I'm working on a pithy title. But just like Matt's list, I cannot describe to you the criteria, but you just know.
At least you've got a list.
It's a feeling. It's a feeling. And Bianca Andreescu's on it. Elise Cornet is on it. Who else is on it, Matt? Leila Fernandez was a TBC. She was a potential next entrant, but I'm not sure today has done her any favours.
I think Danielle Collins might have been a TBC.
Danielle Collins. Or a definite, again, maybe. Today's been a bad day for my list, hasn't it? It's been a better day for your list than it has been for my list.
Yeah, although Coco Gauff is on my list.
Yulia Putintseva lost to 7-6 in the third the other day. What's going on?
In fact, this has been a disastrous time for my list. Look, I'll work on the title and I'll get back to you.
And they need to work on their games.
Yes, more importantly, big day for the backhand list though, Matt.
Oh, really big day. And actually, it dawned on me that perhaps one of the reasons I keep getting drawn to the Swiss team is because they make up 2/5 of the backhand list. Because not only have we got Golubic with her single hand, we've got Bencic, and her backhand is astonishingly good. And we saw it today against Leila Fernandez. And yeah, big, big day for the backhand list. And for the first time, I've asked a backhand list player about their own backhand.
How did that go?
She wasn't as enthusiastic about her own backhand as I was. That was Victoria Golubich who I asked. I literally said, "I love your backhand." Which, looking back, was maybe a bit weird. But I wanted to know whether she's always had a single hander. And she explained to me that no, she didn't. She used to have a double hander on both sides because Monica Seles was someone that she grew up idolizing. And her coach told her to switch it up when she was about 12 or 13. And she finds a lot more comfort in hitting it with one hand and brings her variety, which we saw today against Andreescu, to full effect. But yeah, big, big day for backhands in Switzerland.
What is going on with Leila Fernandez? Because she's won her first four sets, singles and doubles, 6-love, 6-love, 6-1, 6-1, and then she loses her fifth set, 6-love, against Belinda Bencic. From what I could make out, this was what Belinda Bencic sometimes does to people. She can sometimes make people look really ordinary and make me question my decisions, my sort of verdict about Belinda Bencic, which is that she's somebody who's never actually going to maximize her potential and fulfill her potential. But maybe this match is just encapsulating what the problem is, that she can turn it on occasionally and not keep it on.
Maybe. I mean, she kept it on today. She played very, very well through the whole match, even though Fernandez managed to make the second set closer. Confusing, though, Leila Fernandez, for sure, having looked so good yesterday and then coming out and not being great in that first set, although I do think mostly it was about how good Bencic was. I mean, really, she didn't put a foot wrong. She didn't miss a ball. She was taking it early, striking winners. I did have a conversation with someone today who suggested that it's almost easy to get very carried away by a score like a 6-love, 6-love, when actually that might be a result that you can't really read much into because of the nature of it. Clearly, the opponent has had a bit of a shocker. And therefore, how well is someone actually playing? Have they been properly tested? And I thought there was perhaps something in that. So maybe Fernandez wasn't quite as electrifying yesterday as maybe the scoreline suggested. But certainly Bencic today, I thought, was absolutely fantastic. And the latter stages of that match where Fernandez was playing well, they were playing well at the same time. You saw from Bencic, I think, just that she seems to trust herself a bit more in this competition. There's a little bit more about her when she's playing these team competitions or even the Olympics last year than when we see her in a slam, for example. She's a little bit bolder, a little bit braver. I just trust her more in big moments. And yes, she got broken when serving for the match, but she regrouped and broke back and then served it out at the second attempt. And I thought it was a really high quality display from Bencic all round.
Without fail, I get carried away with a 6-love, 6-love in a draw.
Yeah, me too.
And it's all down to Sergio Bruguera beating Cherion Champion 6-love, 6-love, 6-love in 1993 and then going on and winning the French Open. I always think back to that. If I see it in the first round of a tournament and then we're making our predictions the next day, pretty much without fail, whether I've seen the match or not, whether I know anything about the injury status of the opponent or not, I will predict that player will go and win the tournament. It doesn't seem to work. Now I know why it doesn't work. It's kind of like when Catherine sees Bianca Andreescu shout "come on" once and is then all in.
I'm a sucker.
She was doing it a bit today, Catherine. I mean, when she won that that first set, and you know, you can't imagine her losing from there. That is that's a poor result for her in the end, isn't it? I mean, I take everything you've said on board, Matt, about how well Golubic has done. But still, this is a woman who won the US Open 3 years ago. She's trying to mount this comeback. She's pumped up. She should not be losing against Victoria Golubic from a setup.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. The only thing I would add is that she's not the player that won the US Open anymore. Well, she isn't. I mean,
she's not.
It's been 3 years and there's been an it's been an awful lot of upheaval in her life since then. And I think I still think she can get back to being that player. I do. But
phew.
I do the same thing. I still kind of expect her to be that player. You know, I picked Canada to win this competition. They're now out. And I did that because of the potential that Bianca Andreescu holds. You know, I think maybe tomorrow is going to be the day when she's 2019 Bianca Andreescu again. And it just isn't realistic, is it? It's a much longer, you know, buzzword, sports word process than just being able to suddenly do it tomorrow, I think, for her.
It's okay. I actually find it a bit of a relief to reach that conclusion and realization, actually. She's currently not that player. I back her to find it, but I do think it's going to be a journey because she was 19 when she won the US Open, and she, you know, it's like I don't see her as in exactly the same situation as Tsitsipas. She's won a slam, but it's like a little bit like what I was saying with Tsitsipas you've the other day, David. You've got the youth window and you've got the experience window, and I do think there's a bit of another zone in between. You know, she's not playing with the freedom that she played with when she won the US Open, and you can't, after experiencing what she's experienced. You know, the pandemic hit her hard. She's had struggles with her mental health. She's had significant injury struggles. She's had upheaval in her team. It's not weakness that she's not able to play like she did when she was a 19-year-old with nothing to lose. She needs to find a new way of doing it mentally, I think, because the game is still there. And I do think she'll do that. I think it's a journey.
Yeah. Well, and it's a longer term journey, isn't it? Because I think what really characterized the way she burst on the scene and won that title was that she'd done the same in Indian Wells earlier that year. She'd done the same in the summer on the way. It was as though she'd never known proper defeat. We'd never seen her.
There was a point where we'd never seen her lose a tennis match. No. The only match we had known her to not win was a retirement.
Yeah.
You know, that. And that was her experience as well. So, of course, she can't be that tennis player again. And actually realising that is a little bit liberating for Bianca Andreescu's stan.
What's a stan?
A
big fan?
A fan.
Yeah. Yeah, a fan.
Let's go with
right.
fan.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And actually, I think there's an interesting watch for us with Emma Raducanu in that respect as well, because
yes.
she was an even more dramatic on the scene out of nowhere, winning a big title and is then having to try to figure it all out and work out what's next. How do I get back to ever doing that again?
When looseness and freedom is a big factor in your success, that is an interesting dynamic, I think, because it's almost impossible to maintain that long term. Almost impossible. Unless you just ride a ridiculous wave, it will end. You will wipe out at some point, and you have to rebuild yourself mentally into a slightly different player. And that is fascinating. Tough, but fascinating.
Okay. Well, the other match we had today featured another couple of players. You mentioned Goff and Collins briefly. Should say that the selections, let's just concentrate on those very quickly as well, because Petra Pala chose Markéta Vondrousova, who had had that run to the title in Shrewsbury that we were talking about the other day, singles and doubles. And she comes out and beats Danielle Collins 6-3, 6-3. I watched the latter stages of that, and one player just looked so much more fresh and more, you know, in the zone and in the moment and present. Collins looked like she was just trying to hit winners at the end to find some sort of solution. And then Katerina Siniaková has been chosen to play Coco Gauff when they've got an option of Karolina Muchová or Karolina Pliskova as options on that team. And I would never have expected those choices, particularly Siniaková. And he's absolutely nailed it. Both of them were just brilliant, Matt.
They were, yeah. I mean, he's been the Czech captain, I think, for 15 years, and you know, it's been an amazingly successful time. And you sort of wonder how often does he have to make really big decisions like that with such a strong team at his disposal? Or maybe having such a strong team means that you have to make more decisions because there are more options. Either way, he absolutely got it right today. And in the first match, I thought Vondrousova was particularly impressive because she went down an early break to Collins in an eight deuce game she lost, you know, and so often those games, they feel really important at the time and they prove to be, you know, you can look back on them and that was the moment where kind of everything changed. Collins gets the break after eight deuces. And then I think Vondrousova won eight games in a row after that. The resilience and just the quality of her tennis that she showed in that period, she absolutely picked Danielle Collins apart, you know, putting the ball in awkward spots, playing with the most incredible angles. You know, I forget Vondrousova exists. I really do. And I think a lot of people do. You know, she is a Grand Slam finalist and an Olympic silver medalist. And yet, when she's not around, it's not like everyone is screaming, gosh, how much better tennis would be with Marketa Vondrousova. And don't we really miss her? And yet, I do think those things are true. Tennis is better when she's playing well because she's an absolute joy to watch. And we saw that today against Danielle Collins, who wasn't great, it has to be said. I didn't think she was great the other day either against Poland until the deciding set tiebreak, where she suddenly just sort of hit seven winners and managed to win that match. But I do think the US team on paper at this tournament is really, really strong. But Collins didn't play very well. Keys didn't play very well the other day. And therefore, we weren't surprised to see Coco Gauff brought in. And yet, I thought Coco Gauff would do better. But I guess, again, in hindsight, it's perhaps not that surprising that she didn't play that well today, given the state of her game in Fort Worth, where her forehand was all over the place, and the fact that she's fatigued and tired and had a long, long trip over. And again, today, the game was not in a good place at all, particularly the forehand. I mean, by the end, she was just hitting whole games of forehand errors. It's really, really alarming on that shot at the moment. It seems to have got worse. I felt like it had reached a point in the season where she was, I don't know whether she was covering for it better or whether it actually got better, but it was seemed to be less of an issue in the sort of middle portion of this season. But in the last few matches she's played, it's really, really broken down. And Siniaková, going back to her, a brilliant pick because they had Karolina Pliskova in that slot yesterday. And I just feel like Siniaková as a competitor was a much better option to go up against Gauff, the competitor. You know, Siniaková was kind of relentless and didn't allow Gauff to be the bigger force on the court. I thought Siniaková was absolutely brilliant today. And it's a very, very impressive win for the Czechs and quite a clever one. Not how I thought they would do it. I thought they might have to win it in the doubles, but really, really impressive.
Yeah, I thought the same. I'm going to make a conscious decision to put the Gauff forehand catastrophe today down to fatigue and the last 2 weeks of it as well, because otherwise I'm really worried, because I don't think I've seen a single shot of a professional tennis player just come apart at the seams to quite as an alarming degree as that. You know, she could not trust that ball was going over the net or in the court. And that must be a horrible, horrible feeling. I mean, the serve was problematic as well, in as much as it wasn't pulling her out of trouble. But, I mean, she just could not trust that the forehand would even work. And I think probably what happens is when you're feeling fresh, and especially as somebody as young and fit and full of energy as she usually is, she's able to get around the ball, use her footwork and just always be in the right position for the forehand, and therefore it probably does work. And she started going after it a lot more earlier in the year, and that's what I'm hoping for. And I think it's probably a lot easier to make the corrections when you're feeling fresh. But it's quite clear who's the player, Catherine. It's Sakkari, isn't it, that you always say when she gets tight the technique starts to be exposed. and maybe fatigue has exposed a real weakness here, because fundamentally there's a problem with the Coco Gauff forehand, and that was scarily bad today. And I just hope that I hope it's correctable, because, you know, it looks shocking, really, to see a shot of a player of that caliber going off to that degree.
Yeah, I do think fatigue tolerance and anxiety tolerance are factors in people's stroke production and shots and games that we perhaps don't factor in enough. And perhaps for us, that's because we don't have the technical know-how to be able to. But I think that analysis is probably bang on, David. You know, anybody can hit a perfect forehand when there's no ball, you know, when it's an air swing. I mean, anyone at that level, of course, not anybody in this Zoom call at the moment. You know, it's almost always down to positioning, isn't it? That why you miss a shot or make an unforced error. So that does make sense to me. But I hear you, that you've made a conscious decision, David, but I also hear the intense worry in your voice.
You're right to detect that, because I really want Coco Gauff to happen. I want Coco Gauff to be a Grand Slam champion and somebody that is leading this sport.
And I mean, the thing is, she is happening, even with a forehand deficiency. Like, she has got to the WTA finals in singles and doubles this year. She's got to a Grand Slam final this year in singles. Like, it's been a brilliant, brilliant year, and she's still a teenager. And there's a very obvious way that she can still improve. Like, that's the sort of positive look at it, I think. And that is absolutely, I think, the right, you know, the right view to have. But long term, I do agree, if she wants to be winning Grand Slam titles, then I do think fixing the forehand, because I agree that it's got worse in the last 2 weeks, but still it has been an element of her game that sort of experts have always sort of looked at and thought, that needs to get better. And I think long term, it needs a fix, to be honest.
Okay, well, I hope she rests up and feels better on her way home, because I think it's a fantastic effort that she came at all to Glasgow, and it shows how much this event means to her, and good for her for doing that. The semi-finals tomorrow, Great Britain against Australia, that's at 10 o'clock in the morning, Matt, is it? That's what we thought it was going to be last night?
10 o'clock, yes. And in the UK, it's live on BBC Two. It's had an upgrade, so hopefully lots of people will be watching that. I think it's bumped some programmes off, and we'll be competing with snooker a little bit. But yeah.
Quite early, isn't it?
It is early.
My mum's pumped now that she knows that she can watch it, and 10 o'clock suits her down to the ground.
Right.
But, you know, it is quite early atmosphere-wise, isn't it? You wonder, because, I mean, I know they put 600 tickets on and £20 a head, and I just hope everybody gets in there and gets into it early on, because what better than Britain against Australia in Britain?
Yeah, they should hand out coffees on the door.
It's 10 o'clock, Catherine, not 6 a.m.
On a Saturday, though, it means to get there and everything, probably getting up at 8. Minimum, aren't you? Yeah. I mean,
are we getting up at 8 minimum?
I was up at 6:30 today, folks. Anyway, it's going to be really interesting, isn't it? And look, Catherine, we didn't have a chance to talk to you about last night's matches, and I mean, you were following it as well. It was extraordinary, wasn't it? And a really pleasant surprise. I mean, I don't wish ill on Spain or anything, but from a British tennis perspective, you know, 7 years ago when Britain got to the final of the Davis Cup, it always felt like that would happen. This is just such an extraordinary surprise.
I was really swept up by it yesterday. I loved watching it. I loved sort of, you know, that creeping feeling of, am I going to allow myself to think that this might happen? What is the point at which I allow myself to think that this might happen?
And what was it?
So many times I'd hovered over sending a WhatsApp. And I waited until Barnett and Nichols had broken at the start of the second set before I sent that WhatsApp. Now, they did get broken back, but then, of course, they, you know, they just kept on breaking at will in that, in that second set.
I noticed you sort of said, this really is quite something, isn't it?
Mm. Or maybe I said, this really could be quite something. I couched, yeah.
That was very un-Catherine-like. Usually, it's on, this is happening. And then,
It was so improbable, wasn't it? And I'm so, you know, I have to declare bias here, but, you know, I work with Ankyothavong a lot and I have so much time for her and I'm delighted for her. And, you know, she played a real part there, just like we were talking about with some of the ties today. She made bold calls. You know, I think, not to take anything away from Leon Smith at all, but the teams largely picked themselves, didn't they, when Great Britain won the Davis Cup back in 2015. And, you know, that team yesterday didn't pick itself. There were big calls there that were risks for Ankyothavong. They could have ended up with egg on their faces, really, the GB team after that week. And I'm chuffed for them all. And the vibes were fantastic. And as you pointed out on the pod, David, which I enjoyed listening to in a piazza earlier on today, the contrast in vibes between the GB bench and the Spanish bench was like a sort of before and after shot in sort of a tragic movie where something awful's happened. But I say, you haven't lost yet. Someone tell the dude with his head in his hands that they haven't lost yet.
And you're not helping.
Yeah, really bizarre. But yeah, what a night.
What are you prepared to say about tomorrow, both of you, then, in terms of predictions? I think we need to nail our colours to the mast and say what we think is going to happen. GB against Australia. So, I mean, I think the selection should be fairly obvious now, shouldn't it? You would have thought Heather Watson and Harriet Dart will resume as singles players, and Storm Sanders Hunter, is it? Was it? Storm Hunter, that was it.
No, Storm Sanders.
No, she's called Storm Sanders, David.
Okay. What was that? What was Hunter? Where did Hunter come from?
Well, her fiancé or boyfriend is called Hunter,
I
think.
Oh, yes. That was the speculation that we were talking about, isn't it? And Ayla Tomljanovic is the other singles player, the number one for Australia. So, I mean, what do you think?
Well, Matt's far more qualified than me. I mean, Australia are the clear favourites, I would say. And I haven't looked up the head-to-heads, but unless there's some really quirky head-to-head then I going on there, I don't see why anybody would change up their teams. What do you think, Matt?
I think it might come down to the doubles again.
Oh, yes, please.
Although we haven't had many deciding doubles this week, so maybe that's me partly hoping for another one. I think Heather Watson, she was really good the other day, and I just think you have to factor in some sort of home advantage for Britain. I think that is a very real thing, a very real factor, and I suspect it will come up at some point. And I think it will help Watson, and I think maybe she might win. Tomljanovic is such a classy player, and she's playing really well. I feel quite confident in her. I think she'll win, as good as Harriet Dart was against Barossa. So therefore, we're into a deciding doubles. Now, Australia have got a couple of things they could do with that doubles team. I think Storm Sanders will definitely play, and then she could partner Sam Stosur, as she did the other day, or she could partner Ellen Perez. Now, I think either of those pairs, it will be quite close. I don't think Australia are massive, massive favourites, to be honest, based on what we saw the other day from Barnett and Nichols. I think they're favourites in that double. Sanders has been up into the top 10 in the world in doubles. She's very good. But I'm going to go with Australia to sneak it in the doubles. But yeah, I think it could be pretty close.
Interesting. I'm going to go for Britain.
How are you getting there?
Britain are going to win it in the doubles as well. It's going to be a doubles.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see Harriet Dart beating Ayla Tomljanovic. I do see Heather Watson winning. So, and this is probably my British bias talking, if I'm honest. I mean, I try to be objective most of the time, but I am pretty swept up by this one.
And I'm aware that we might be underrating Storm Sanders there, because she has a reputation of constantly delivering in this tournament and exceeding expectations. You know, she's beaten Elise Mertens in this event before. Like, I think Watson might win, but if Sanders comes out,
made me doubt myself now, Matt.
If Sanders comes out and plays really well, then you've got Tomjanovic, and suddenly even getting to the doubles will be tough. So
I think Watson has to win.
I agree. Yeah. I think she has to win. Yeah. Which therefore makes it maybe even harder for her to win.
10 a.m. as well. I hope she's a morning person.
So what about the other one? Switzerland against the Czech Republic. That feels like the big clash of the whole event so far, in terms of, you know, the really big guns. They just both feel like really, I mean, obviously Czech Republic is one of the great Fed Cup, Billie Jean King Cup teams that we've ever had. And Switzerland are just gathering in strength all the time as well.
Yeah, and this is a repeat of a match that happened in the Billie Jean King Cup finals last year, which of course was in the Czech Republic in Prague, and Switzerland won. You know, they took them down, and that was a Czech team with Krejcikova. Benčić beat Krejcikova in the singles there. And then they won the doubles. And I think they might do that again. I think Benčić will win singles, and I think Benčić and probably Teichmann will beat Vondroušová and Muchová. But again, it feels very, very tight. But I just, having seen what I saw today from Benčić, I am sort of more confident in Switzerland, even more confident in Switzerland than I was. But, you know, again, I'm going with a deciding doubles rubber. I'm getting too hopeful.
Oh, I'm with you. That sounds good to me. Catherine, who do you reckon's going to win?
Yeah, I'm quite persuaded by Switzerland and the narrative about last year and everything Matt's saying about Belinda Bencic and the fact that she won Olympic gold last year. I'm sticking close to Matt on this one. I think Switzerland.
Well, I've got Switzerland winning the whole event, so I can't exactly stop now. Okay.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Catherine, you have spent the day in the company of the best male tennis players who are fit in the world.
That was a lot of caveats, David. That started off as a really big blockbuster headline and petered out.
Well, I'm all for accuracy. And you're there for Prime Video, who are the rights holders for this event, and you're going to be presenting their coverage in the UK on site. Now, obviously, the interviews you've been doing are for them, so I don't know how much you can give away. What can you tell us about what you've seen today and what you've heard today and what you've experienced today in that city?
Well, the media day took place in the Piazza San Carlos in the centre of Turin, which was a glorious setting. The sun was shining. I had to take my coat off. It was so warm, had to do all the interviews staring into the sun with sort of my hand over my eyes like a visor. So yeah, wonderful setting, and you know, the players are all clearly chuffed to be there. It was a very interesting media day, actually. I feel like I got more out of the players than you sometimes do, you know, when their game faces are completely on and they're just, you know, giving you standard sporting platitudes. What can I tell you? I can tell you that Stefanos Tsitsipas is very consumed by the fact that he has the chance to reach world number one this week. He brought it up before I had the chance to. I said to him, my question was going to be, how much is that on your mind? But it's very clearly on your mind. And then he started waxing lyrical about how, you know, he's dreamed of it forever. And I think it's very unlikely. I think he would have to win every match this week and other results fall in line as well. But
I'm a bit worried that he's getting a bit too into that then.
Be interesting how that carrot plays out for him, how that carrot affects his results. I asked him about the memories of winning this tournament in 2019, obviously, when it was held at the O2 in London. And he said, I didn't sleep for 3 days afterwards. He said, I was so excited and adrenalized. I didn't sleep for 3 days. I mean, that guy really feels his feelings, doesn't he?
It's sure a lot. Does. Gotta love him for it.
It's a lot. I had dog chat with Danil Medvedev, not on air. there was a really lovely dog just to his right that was slightly distracting me, and he turned around to see what I was looking at, and he said, oh, it's a lovely Cocker Spaniel. And so instantly I went, here's a guy that knows his dogs. And I said, oh, yeah, lovely dogs, aren't they? He said, yeah, they really are lovely dogs. I said, do you have a dog? He said, no, I'd love to have a dog. But he doesn't think he can have one until he retires. But I told him to keep me posted on what breed he was considering and strongly recommended a Cavapoo. Yeah, he was very effusive about fatherhood and what a motivation it is for him now to stay at the top of the game until his daughter is of an age where she can appreciate what he does and watch him play and enjoy it, get some pleasure out of it and be proud. You know, he said, I want to make my daughter proud of me. And I felt like saying, Danil, you can pick a Cocker Spaniel out of a lineup. You're set. Don't worry about it. So that was nice. Andrei Rublev was sweet and terrifying. I asked him, I said, Andre, I get the impression that you would happily play tennis 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And he said, yep, that you've got me nailed. I would absolutely, definitely do just that. Kasper Ruud, I asked him what makes him angry. And I won't spoil the answer. Tune into Prime Video to find out. But long story short, not a lot.
What a sanguine
individual. Yes. Felix Auger-Aliassime was just starry-eyed and ever so polite and just so chuffed to be there. But also, you know, feeling like he can win it, I think. Why not? Taylor Fritz was, you know, it sounded like he'd just woken up and rolled off a beach in California. And it was an early start, actually. Maybe he's a bit of a Catherine Whittaker with early starts. But he was already in Turin when he found out that he was going to qualify for the main lineup, because he was obviously always planning to come as an alternate. Lost early in Paris. So, you know, obviously he's American, stayed in Europe, came straight to Turin with his girlfriend. So it kind of didn't change his travel plans or anything. But he said they really had a moment and they, you know, looked at one another and he said, we made it, which is really lovely. Who else? Who am I missing? Oh, Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal. Djokovic was very relaxed, in very good spirits. He was quite, he got a fair amount of time with him, which you don't always because of how in demand he and Nadal were. So very relaxed, very open. I thought I asked him with a bit of trepidation about how he would reflect on his year. And you know, he gave a bit of a laugh and he was like, oh, ups and downs. Nadal told me that his baby son, Rafael, is here in Turin with him. Probably too young to take in any of the tennis, I would have thought. I doubt he'll make an appearance, but that's a nice thought. And he said fatherhood's treating him very well. I get the impression it's very difficult to tell with Rafa, isn't it? Because he'll always say that his expectations are low. But I get the impression this is maybe kind of data gathering for Nadal about his rib injury and assorted other sort of ongoing health complaints. You know, his last answer was the most telling, where he said, look, I have no expectations, but equally, I can't not want to win. You know, he gave this broad smile and he said, you know me, I want to win. So that's going to be interesting. I think he plays Taylor Fritz in his opening match on Sunday evening. And I think we're going to learn a lot after that match.
Were you suitably enthused about the event off the back of today? Because one comment you made earlier to me that really stayed with me is that because it's not a capital city, and you showed me a bit of the video of the scene there and the enthusiasm, that you feel like they're really into this. They're really taking this tournament to their heart. They want everybody to know that the tournament's here and they're proud of the city.
Yeah. I was gutted when the tournament made the decision to leave London. It was obviously very convenient for me. The O2 was a great venue and it was a tremendous success there. But having said all that, I do think there is a lot to be said for having these kind of events in non-capital cities, because it's the biggest show in town. It's the biggest thing happening in Turin at the moment. You get the feeling that most people on the street, if asked, would know that this is happening and would probably be able to name a few of the players, or would probably say, oh yeah, I've seen a poster about that. And just the fact that the launch was happening in the main piazza, and they'd created a sort of a blue cot, they'd created a really theatrical situation where the players arrived individually. They walked this blue carpet with barriers up with, you know, fans there. And it felt like the center of attention. And, you know, that as somebody very invested in tennis, that's just wonderful to see the sport be center stage. You know, I think there's a lot to be said for it.
Yeah, there sure is. I'm looking forward to it and very much looking forward to watching you present the show from there. Talking of a show that's on at the moment, also in Italy, the next gen semi-final between Jack Draper and Brandon Nakashima is currently locked in a fourth inverted commas set. It's those short ones. And it's Nakashima winning it 2-1 as things stand, but it's a tiebreak in the fourth one. And it looks really, really dramatic, actually. I've got no sound on, just got the pictures, but the crowd look massively into it. And the players are so pumped up and the coaches are going wild. I mean, this is what, when that event is good to me, is when you've got two players like these two who are so hungry and desperate to break through, and they're making their strides on the main tour, but they want to go head to head. They want to throw themselves at each other and see who comes out on top. And I'm really excited. I mean, I'm not sure how America and American tennis fans feel about Brandon Nakashima, but I'm massively excited about Jack Draper from a British tennis point of view. He's just got it, hasn't he? I don't know how far it'll take him. I don't know how far his body will hold up, but God, he's
exciting. It's not just the fact that he's British and good, is it? It's the way he plays. It's razzmatazz, isn't it? But it's also not... what's the word I'm looking for? He's got high rally tolerance, hasn't he? He can also play quite a, you know, Djokovic-esque ping-pongy game, but then suddenly inject massive brute force at the flick of a switch, seemingly. So I find him very, very engaging to watch. I do wish. I really support the next gen finals generally, and I love the fact that they innovate and they trial things and they use it as a petri dish for those things. I think that's brilliant. But we've tried the first to four scoring system and it doesn't work. So please stop trialing that now. That would be something that I would like to say and have said.
Does it work for that event, though? I mean, people seem very excited.
No, I don't think it works ever. It's a solution to a problem that doesn't exist.
Okay. I don't like it either. But
There is one perfect thing about tennis, and that's the scoring system.
No, I think I do agree. Okay. Our mascot for today, well, I don't seem to have a photo to hand of Pippin, but I can tell you this. Pippin has been put forward as a mascot by pod listeners Jimmy and Becky Piggott Bader from Tooting in southwest London. Pippin is Becky's mum's 5-year-old Labrador. We love a Labrador, don't we? And Pippin keeps Jimmy company when they're back visiting Becky's mum and he's out running around Worcester Pitchcroft and listening to the pod. Oh, very good. Pippin's slender frame for a Labrador, an oversized tongue, an insatiable love of chasing after used tennis balls makes us think he may have some spaniel in it, but we're not allowed to say this around Becky's mum. We got married in April and I was vetoed in my suggestion for Pippin to be a ring bearer. But the compromise was that...
Vetoed by who?
I don't know. Doesn't say.
If it was the... husband, then call the whole thing
the
off.
The compromise was that we got to spend the first 2 days of our honeymoon at the Italian Open. So all's well that ends well.
Oh, don't see why you couldn't have had both, Becky, but okay.
Amazing. Brandon Nakashima's just won, by the way. He's into the final.
He has. Yeah, I had to do some real staring at the score to check that that was a victory.
Catherine's against it. Short sets and 10 a.m. starts. As long as you keep away from those two things.
It's everything I stand against. Yeah. Hello, Pippin sounds lovely. Yeah. And big fan of Labradors. Rosie is half Labrador, half retriever. Oh, and
love Rosie.
My old dog Bella was a Labrador. And Tooting is just down the road from me. So all in all, hello and thank you.
Marvellous. I've got my mascot, Darwin. I tell you what, Darwin, after Caroline Garcia's heroics last week, suddenly it's on. Because Switzerland are pulling up trees this week for me. So, you know, let's see. Catherine's got Carter. Matt's got the dearly departed Gerald. Billie Jean the dog has got Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, who are in Glasgow. And I've seen lots of pictures on the screen of Billie Jean loving the tennis. Chris Albert Lee and Carl Weingartner are our executive producers. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We have Sean and Kathleen in Tucson, Arizona.
Right, Sean. And Kathleen? Arizona.
Now, I feel like I know something about Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson Train is a Bruce Springsteen song.
Oh, that's what it is. There we go.
That's how I know how to pronounce it.
Yes, it's spelled T-U-C-S-O-N,
indeed.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Arizona, home of the Cardinals, who have been beaten twice by the Seahawks this year.
Is that... Yes. It's also got Downbound Train, hasn't it? It's a lot of train songs.
Yeah. Land of Hope and Dreams is all about a train. Loves the train metaphor. Although I heard his new album released today is a bit ropey.
Oh, really?
Bruce has released a ropey album.
I haven't listened yet.
It's covers.
Who says that?
Well, all the reviews. I think it might be a misfire.
I wasn't...
Has he gone off the rails?
No.
Not off the rails, David.
Has he lost it?
I have to
hope
say,
not seeing him next year.
Not that bothered.
No,
about
I don't really
album.
Care. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just We might have to pretend that.
Yeah, we'll just forget it ever happened.
Kathleen, incidentally, I would say, sitting in the car park outside the church.
Oh, right.
Oh, like when you said someone was in the graveyard.
Oh, God.
Was that another Kathleen that I said
they've been
in the
upgraded
graveyard?
To the car
anyway.
Park?
No, it wasn't.
Anyway. You get the idea, Kathleen.
Second shout out, Matt.
We've got Christine Chan in New York.
Right, Christine.
Hello, Christine. I feel like we perhaps know Christine. Well, certainly Christine has previously had a shout out. Perhaps not, given the way Matt's looking at me. But anyway, Christine, you feel familiar to me somehow.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've not been long back from New York. We're locals to you.
Happy days.
Great those days. Were.
Sure were.
And we'll be again.
We've also got Gabriel Hartman in Indiana.
Right, Gabriel.
Gabriel.
Ooh, this is a US special.
Gabriel says, he found the podcast in January 2020 and it made my train ride in and out of Chicago for ballet so much more enjoyable.
It's like a train... train themed shout out section.
So is Gabriel a ballet dancer?
It would suggest so.
Brilliant. That's so cool.
Love
Chicago is a city I'd love to visit one day. I told my wife that
today. He's not from Chicago. That's lovely, David, but he's not from Chicago.
He goes to Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I missed that. I thought he was from Indiana.
For his ballet.
That's a completely different state.
There's a lot going on in this shout out.
Interstate ballet lessons.
I told my wife I want to go to Chicago today, and she said she just sort of pulled her face as if to say why. And I was like, I reckon it's really nice.
I'd love to go to Chicago. Not sure I'd want to commute there from Indiana. Hang on, I'm just Googling the
oh, God. Carry on, Matt, while she's doing that.
I mean, great commitment. Anyway.
Gabriel, thank you. We've got Selena Woods in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Special. Have you literally deliberately only pulled US people today?
Hello, Selena. I have transited through Charlotte on the plane. There's I feel like there's a Mexican tequila bar there where I've probably spent some time.
There is in most cities.
And actually, I've said in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's not right. From Charlotte, North Carolina, but currently living in Ohio. And Selena,
Selena
says that her mum, who is almost 83, plays tennis three times a week, and they always get tickets to Cincinnati for her birthday.
Oh, lovely.
That's a good effort. Three times a week. Blimey.
Yeah. Love that. Incidentally, Chicago seems to be right on the border of Indiana and Illinois. So there we go. Maybe it's not that long a commute.
Have we got one more shout out?
We do. And it is.
Is it from America?
It is. It is for Dana Frohwine in California.
Oh.
Hi, Dana.
Whereabouts in California?
I mean, I could make somewhere up or
have a
guess.
Which means he doesn't know. but Dana.
Dana, thank you ever so much. California is great.
It sure is.
No matter where in California you're from, it's all great.
And all of our American friends who have signed up for shout-outs are great. And in fact, everybody who's signed up for shout-outs and our friends generally are great. Thank you all so much for your support. And if you'd like to become a friend, have a shout out, get all of our bonus episodes, you can do that. The link is in the show notes. I think, folks, we can call it a night and look forward, hopefully. We'll tell you about it, Catherine, after you've woken up. This amazing tennis match at 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow between GB and Australia.
11 o'clock in Italy, though.
I mean, I'm working tomorrow, so I'll be awake. And I'm saying if I was a fan trying to have a leisurely Saturday and either go to the tennis or watch it on the telly, I would be displeased by the 10 a.m. start. To be clear, I will be awake.
She will. She's got...
And and functioning.
What are you doing tomorrow? What's on tomorrow morning?
I'm interviewing the doubles players in the morning, and then we have a rehearsal where I'll check that I can hear all the director and producer and everything and see what the delay is on the line and all of that. Hopefully minimal, because that can be quite a spanner in the works.
Very exciting, all this telly land, isn't
it? I'll let you know tomorrow.
Okay, look forward to it. All right, Matt, go and get some sleep. Catherine, go and get some sleep. Folks, get your rest in as well, because you've got tennis to watch tomorrow. You'll have a tennis podcast after it's all done and dusted too. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.